Hey, Holden Village, you are very privileged to have this opportunity to hear this amazing story that I can't even believe, and this is the third time I've heard it. The first time I heard part of it, it was on YouTube, and then I finally heard the rest of it last year, and there's even more than what was written down. So just buckle into your seats, enjoy your ice cream, and listen to a great story. Here's Terry Sanderson.
Hello. This was I don't know, you've probably had a day like this where everything goes wrong. Well, I had a day like that about 33 years ago in January when I was up here at Holden, and it was such a terrifically bad day that before I went to bed that night, I took notes and made a story out of it. So here it is. I only wanted to take a little vacation, and never in my life have I experienced such misery. It seems sometimes that misfortune seethes beneath the crust of a normal day waiting to erupt. It was the brightest of days that morning of January 10th, 1983. The day was sunny, as were my expectations for the little vacation I was about to take to the vastness of the outside world from my mountain home of Holden Village, Chelan, Washington, 98816. It had snowed and rained for several days prior to this sunny one, but now it seemed all too perfect for travel that morning. Six companions and I boarded a snow track at 10 a.m. for the half-hour ride to the Lake Chelan Ferry, which would take us out of the mountains. The Bombardier snow track hummed powerfully and ate up the first 6 miles of the 12-mile drive when suddenly in our path was an ominous avalanche blocking the road. It was huge, but brave souls that we were, we attacked it forthwith, shovel in hand, and promptly leveled a trail over it for our transport. Surely our troubles were over. We loaded ourselves into the Bombardier, confident once again in our ultimate success, when what did our incredulous eyes perceive in our path but another avalanche, so huge it seemed insurmountable. No doubt these slides were triggered by heavy snows and rain from the past 2 days. It looked hopeless that we could make the ferry, but being the mechanic, I elected to run 3 miles to get our D6 bulldozer, which sat at the top of the switchback grade where the road goes downhill to the ferry dock. If I got back in time with the Caterpillar, I could easily doze a road through this obstacle and we would catch our boat. Since I was slightly overweight, running through slush in 3-pound hiking boots was not a joyous thing for me to do. At least I did not see an avalanche in all the way from my comrades to the Caterpillar, and hope for my trip still glimmered dimly in my soul. I reached the Caterpillar and began to set things in motion. True to its name, the starting engine on the Caterpillar started, and the main engine roared to life. I hopped aboard like a knight on his steed to the rescue. Surely a hero was never born who struggled with mechanical failure. I raised my blade high and prepared for a headlong charge back to my stranded companions. No sooner had this thought set my gears in motion than the lift on my dozer blade lost heart and fell to earth. I felt my heart sink slightly also as I tried again. With power to spare, up went the blade, and with heart to want, again it fell to earth. It must be the clutch on the cable winch, thought I, as I rigged up some badly battered tools from the toolbox to make repairs. Sure enough, the blade lift soon had power and heart to spare, but now instead of falling down, it was constantly flying up. Back to the tools and clutch I went, and after much fine-tuning, had it going up and down of its own will. Although lamentable at best, I felt at least now it might mediate itself. With this thought in mind, I headed the beast back down the road with the blade flapping like a flag. Perhaps in response to my earnest hope, the blade ceased its pointless flapping and relinquished itself to my control. But then another calamity. There in the road where I had been only half an hour before was the most mammoth avalanche I had yet encountered. It loomed about 25 feet high and 30 yards across. With great fortitude, I lowered my stabilized blade and began the attack. It soon became apparent that at my present rate of progress, we would be lucky to make the January 13th ferry. My friends in the Bombardier had surmounted the previously insurmountable avalanche, but like myself, were left speechless at the base of this last massive slide. With time running short, we contrived one more desperate plan. It was decided that another driver and I would plow the road open to the switchbacks and drive back to the avalanche in our suburban station wagon. Since the switchback grade section of the road was still open, it was possible we could drive with reckless abandon from the avalanche to the lake and still catch the ferry. Plow we did and reached the suburban at the top of the switchbacks in record time. Unfortunately, the road was barely passable, and I determined I should also plow back to the stranded Bombardier with our snowplow, which also sat at the top of the switchbacks, along with another small bus. I put the plow in six-wheel drive, started it up, and lowered the plow. with Tom close behind in the suburban, we headed back. Whoomp! I hit the first snow pile and coughed. The engine died. I tried again, but all those six wheels could push and the whining engine could pull was not enough to move this slushy snow. Once again, the old bulldozer was the only hope. I fired it up and prepared to rattle again down that beaten path. No sooner had I set my tracks in motion than once again the blade on my rebellious caterpillar began its relentless flapping. Once again, I brought forth my battered tools for more fine-tuning, while Tom decided it was best to brave the road without me. Several adjustments later, performance was restored to the blade lift, and I was hot on Tom's heels. I got back to the avalanche just as the Suburban was heading out. I shut down the dozer and jumped in one of the wagon's open doors on the run for the final leg of our perilous journey to the now-waiting ferry. The recently plowed road was bad at best, but Tom held a generally true, though winding, course. When we reached the top of the open road at the switchbacks, I felt the odds were finally beaten and smiled a warm, inward smile of success. Oh, no. What was that odd flapping sound where there used to be the hum of our left rear tire? It just couldn't be. A flat tire while driving on snow? My mind was staggered, but not overcome, as I was certain it could be changed in time. Soon the tire tools and the spare were retrieved, and we could have changed the tire and still made it to the ferry, if only the jack had not been broken. I sat in the snow and hung my head in defeat. Word was received by radio that five of us, which did not include me, as someone had to fix machinery and move all this snow, could drive down lake to a Forest Service boat. And since we couldn't just stand in the middle of the road forever and stare at a flat tire, I jogged back up the hill to get the small bus to finish the trip, while the others moved the wagon off the road. Another panting run to the top of the switchbacks, and I was back with the bus. After some fancy maneuvering, in which I sideswiped the Suburban wagon, I managed to drive around its crippled presence. Unfortunately, in my fancy maneuvering, I busted one of the bus's tire chains. And there was naught to do but remove it and throw it in the back. Though driving with one set of chains is indeed poor, it was traction enough to go downhill on a 10% grade. We made it to the dock at last, though the ferry had been gone for 2 hours. Five people were left at the dock for the Forest Service boat, and five of us, counting three people who had been left by the ferry, prepared for the torturous journey back to the village. There were three vehicles with chains on at the lake we could have used to drive back to the last avalanche and our waiting bombardier on the other side. Two of them were small farm trucks, which would have been ideal. The other was a 35-foot-long school bus. One of the farm trucks had a dead battery, and the other one was so deeply buried in the snow that it could not be moved. And of course, we opted for Plan C and took the 35-foot-long school bus. Well, things went well for about a mile as the old bus chugged and snorted up the grade, but the third switchback proved to be the demise for our driver, Maynard Johnson, who had joined us at the dock. 35 feet is quite a length of a bus to bend around a 120-degree turn, and it just couldn't be done. After several charges at that hairpin turn, Maynard conceded, and we began a slow backwards descent. Somehow on that last fateful corner, the chains had ripped up one of the rear fender wells, which set up a rattle to match my rattled nerves as we wound the bus back down the hill to the lake. What to do now? Well, we decided to take on the hill from two directions. Maynard started walking up the 2 miles of switchback to get the snowplow to clear the road better on the way down, while the others and I stayed behind to jury-rig the busted chain on the small bus. We did a poor but passable repair job with spare chain links and bungee straps. It was dark when Maynard got down to the lake with the plow. With a sense of dull resolution and our lights on, we proceeded back up the hill with the plow in the lead. Home free, I thought to myself, until about halfway up the switchbacks, when suddenly the snowplow was engulfed in a geyser of steam. Though expecting the worst, I could not be fazed by this time. And with toolbox in hand, I morosely ambled up to the wounded truck to survey the damage. It turned out to be only a loose fan belt which had made the truck overheat. I tightened it under the light of a penlight flashlight, which luckily Maynard's wife Karen had brought along, and we were rolling again. We had nearly made it back to the bombardier when the snowplow gasped its last breath in a cloud of steam, 1/2 mile from our destination. The fan belt broke, and we had no recourse but to hoof it back with our luggage to the waiting snow track. What a relief it was to meet the fellow villagers who had come to our aid at the last avalanche and to be loaded on our snow track and headed home at last. But no. Scarcely had we gone a mile than the biggest avalanche that a nightmare could conceive of towered in front of us. It had fallen sometime during the afternoon, and there we were between two avalanches in our bombardier, trapped like rats. This last avalanche was at least 30 feet high and 100 yards across, with two smaller ones about 1/6 as large behind it. What could we do? We radioed the village for food and every able-bodied human being with a shovel that could be found to come out in our utility snow track to help us out. Of course, this snow track had also broken down during the day, so our reinforcements set forth on skis. On this note, we set our weary wills to digging a precarious road over this unforgiving mound. The best that could be said for this task was that progress, though horribly slow, was predictable. At last our reinforcements arrived on their skis with shovels and food for us woebegone travelers. Scoop by scoop, a path was leveled, and even the logs in our way had to be cut by hand since the starter rope on our chainsaw busted after the first pull. To add a final insult to drudgery, I was struck by a runaway bombardier. Unfortunately, however, it did not complete its mission and run over me. More determined than ever, I pulled myself out of the snow and rejoined the others. With the extra food and help, we finally hacked our way over these last obstacles a little after 9 p.m. and made it back to the village at 9:30. I slept a fitful sleep that night, my only consolation being that if my luck had not changed by morning, at least it would be a different day. Thank you.